The question was asked, how are we to understand the halachic weight, the halachic authority of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? So, in order to understand this, we have to understand the involvement of halacha, and then we'll see where the Shulchan Aruch stands as far as the involvement of halacha. What's the Shulchan Aruch, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch's place? We have many classes introducing halacha. We've had many classes describing the involvement of halacha from the period of the Talmud to the period of the Shulchan Aruch. We discussed the involvement and the different opinions and how the opinions were balanced. The Shulchan Aruch was accepted in most of the Jewish people. Above 95% of the Jewish people accepted the halachic ruling of the Shulchan Aruch, called the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, as the general code of behavior for the Jewish people. There are many points where we don't go like the Shulchan Aruch, where the Shulchan Aruch's commentaries, they became accepted. But for the majority of issues, we go with the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch and the Rama. Now, from the time the Shulchan Aruch and on, so we enter the period of the Achronim, and here we have the involvement of halacha. So part of the involvement is the discussion, how do we apply halacha in cases that the Shulchan Aruch didn't discuss, or instances where the Shulchan Aruch says one thing and the commentaries say something else. Let's take a classical example. The question is, what happens if someone did a malacha on Shabbos? Meaning, someone came, walked into your house on Shabbos, and turned on a light in your den. And he's a Jew, and he did it on purpose. A person has a brother who says, this Shabbos I don't want to keep. He walks into the den, and the poor guy walks over to the light switch and turns it on, and he sits down to read a book. That's called Maisa Shabbos. Actions that were done on Shabbos on purpose. So now, can I derive benefit from that action? He did it for himself. He didn't do it for me. Can I derive benefit from that? Or a person walks into the room and he forgets that it's Shabbos. Or a person walks into the room and he knows it's Shabbos, but he just started learning at Machon Meir and he doesn't know yet that you're not allowed to turn on a light on Shabbos. So he turns on the light and then everyone tells him it's Shabbos today. And he says, yeah, I know. And they say, and that action is forbidden. So that's shogeg. He knew it was Shabbos. He didn't know that that action is forbidden. So these are examples of Ma'ase Shabbos, where a person did actions on Shabbos, those actions were prohibited, and either he did it b'mezid on purpose or b'shogeg by mistake. Are you allowed to derive benefit from that? So there are numerous opinions among the Tanoim, and there are numerous opinions among the Amoraim, and numerous opinions among the Rishonim. And then the Shulchan Aruch rules one way, and the Grad disagrees. So now how do you go? La'alacha. Are you allowed to derive benefit? Are you not allowed to derive benefit? What was done on purpose? What was done by mistake? Are you allowed to derive benefit on Shabbos? Are you allowed to derive benefit on Motzei Shabbos? You walk into a bakery and you know they cooked all their goods on Shabbos. Now you want to derive benefit on Motzei Shabbos. Your lights went out on Shabbos and the electric company came and fixed it on Shabbos and you know there were Jews working there. Are you allowed to derive benefit on Shabbos? Are you allowed to derive benefit on Motzei Shabbos? So these are practical halachic questions where the Shulchan Aruch ruled one way and the Gra ruled another way. So even though the Shulchan Aruch seems to be the bottom line, but you have the Gra a few generations later disagreeing. And this is a machlokas that goes back many generations. So from the time the Shulchan Aruch and on, halacha has been evolving. Firstly, with things that not everyone agreed with what the Shulchan Aruch said. So how do we go practically today? What do we do? Shulchan Aruch says you're not supposed to say the blessing of Hanose Mayash Koch. We all do say the blessing of Anosei Mayash Koach. That's an example of a ruling that we don't go with the Shulchan Aruch. So there are many examples of halacha evolving and evolving on points that the Shulchan Aruch dealt with. Then we have the evolvement of things that evolved just because mankind developed. You have advancements in technology. Machine-made matzahs, are they kosher? Are they not kosher? Machine-made tefillin, are they considered done for the sake of tefillin and kosher or not? Machine-made tzitzis, tzitzis have to be done for the sake of tzitzis. Are they considered like human intent can human intent play a role when it comes to machines' actions or not? So technology advanced, and the halacha has to advance with it. The halacha has to deal with technology's advancement. So halacha has evolved. Now, within this framework of halacha evolving, how does a person decide what am I supposed to do? A person sitting at a Shabbos table, and he knows that his host took a cold pot of soup out of the fridge and put it on the platter. So you could say, well, the host is going with the ruling that that's permitted. But you know that your host is an Ashkenazi, and according to the Ashkenazi custom, it's not what he's supposed to be doing. So now you have a situation of Ma'aser Shabbos. An action was done on Shabbos where he did something which, according to Ashkenazi tradition, he's not supposed to do. And can you derive benefit from that or not? Are you supposed to say, no, I don't want any soup now? Or can you say, I'll have some of the soup, thank you. How do you know what to do? In your own home. You see your parents doing things which you're not supposed to do. So now, which opinion do you go with halachically? So the halacha is supposed to be that a person learns the halacha from the sources, from the Gemara, through the Rishonim, through the Shulchan Aruch, and then reaches his own conclusion. He's the rabbi. But in order for a person to do that, he has to learn a lot for many years. And even then, he won't necessarily have an opinion on every matter. He won't be fit to have an opinion on every matter. So then a person is supposed to have a rabbi, and he's supposed to ask his rabbi, and the rabbi is supposed to give halachic ruling. But the problem is that a guy starts learning at the age of 13, and he can't run to the rabbi with every question, because he doesn't know yet. So then we tell a person, here's what you do. You take one of these shortcut farms, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, or the Chayei Adam, or one of the other shortcut farms, and these farim were written by rabbis, and the rabbis are entitled to an opinion. Now, let's say you learned everything, and you'd come to the conclusion that you don't want to go like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that a ger, when he makes the blessing, Shas Anisim and Hanukkah, should say Shas Anisim Avosei Him, that made miracles for their forefathers. And you don't want to go with that ruling. You want to say Shas Anisim Avosei Nu. So, if you learn, you see that that's a very accepted opinion in Allah, and you could go with that opinion. If all you're learning is Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, so you see the opinion that he writes there. So you think you have to go with that. So what do? So you go to your rabbi. If you don't have a rabbi, so all you know is the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So the advantage of learning Kitzur Shulchan Aruch or Chayei Adam or other short svarim is that at least you know an opinion that is halachically acceptable. You are not bound to that opinion. But at least when you encounter a halachic question, you know an acceptable halachic opinion. You know that if you did what it says in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you have who to be based on. You didn't just pull a decision out of the hat. There is a halachic opinion that says this. Are you bound to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? No. Are you bound to the Shulchan Aruch? Yes. But the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is one rabbi's opinion on how the halachs are supposed to be defined from the Shulchan Aruch time to today. He doesn't have the authority of the Shulchan Aruch. He has the authority of a rabbi, just like there are many rabbis today who have many opinions, and you don't go by what all of them say because sometimes they disagree. So you have the rabbi who you go by. So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is one halachic opinion. You can go by him, and that's the advantage of learning the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So when you encounter questions, you'll know that at least I know a halachic opinion, I know what to do according to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. But that doesn't mean that if you would learn more, you would necessarily remain with that opinion. Maybe if you'd learn more, you'd say, well, there's another opinion that that works better for me. Yeah? The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Mekol Chayim might be better. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Rav Chaim David HaLevi wrote a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that Rav Ovadia Yosef wrote. There are many Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. The only thing you have to be careful is you have to know which customs you're adopting. You have to know Rav Chaim David HaLevi is very good, his Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, because he discusses what the Allah has prescribed him in Ashkenazim. But if you read a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, like there are a few Sephardi Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you have to know you're reading what the Sephardi custom and the Sephardi tradition is, if that's what you want to adopt. Rav Ovadia Yosef usually goes with the Shulchan Aruch.
You have to be consistent in your learning to one source.
Ideally, you should have one ready, and you should go with his ruling. A person should be consistent either with a Rebbe or with a tradition. But a ger, when it comes to customs, a ger could say, I'll adopt some customs of this and some customs of that. It's not recommended, but being that he has no customs, that's his choice what to do. It's not recommended, though, to do mishmash, because it'll lead to a family that's confused.
So
then what? What about that?
Person
can say, usually I go with the customs of a person should choose a community to align himself with. Person can say, I'm adopting the Ashkenazi custom. Person can say, I'm adopting the Holland custom. Person can also say, I'm adopting the Rabbi Ovadia Yosef's ruling on most things. And on this point, I'll go with Holland custom. But that's a little different, because when a person says, I'm going to adopt Rabbi Ovadia Yosef's ruling, so what a person is basically saying is he's taking Rabbi Ovadia Yosef as his rabbi. And then he has to see if Rabbi Ovadia Yosef agrees that he could take the Dutch custom of waiting an hour between meat and milk. Meaning there's a difference between adopting customs and adopting a rabbi. When you adopt a rabbi and you say, he's my rabbi, whatever he says I do, then you are obligated to his halachic rulings.
If there's somebody that I call my rabbi, somebody in a halachic sense, or?
It could be in halachic sense, it could not be in halachic sense, that's your choice. You could decide he's your rabbi halachically, whatever he says is what how you're going to run your house. Or you could decide he's the rabbi who I take counsel with, who I admire, who I look up to, but he's not my rabbi in halacha. But you should try to find the rabbi in halacha. And the problem with picking and choosing is that sometimes a person can do things that contradict themselves. And unless a person knows the source of each halacha, sometimes the person says, okay, I'll be lenient there and I'll be stringent there, and he doesn't realize that the actions that he's doing contradict one another. For example, a person can say, oh, Shabbos comes in at this and this hour, so I'll go with the leniency of an opinion that says 5 minutes later. So he can't do that for many reasons, but let's say a person could. There are different opinions about when exactly Shabbos comes in, so they're not printed on the calendars, but let's say a person would say, I'm going to go with the opinion that says Shabbos comes in at this hour. And then when Shabbos goes out, I'll go with the opinion that says Shabbos goes out a little bit earlier. That's a problem. You can't do that, because if on Erev Shabbos you went with that opinion, then on Matzei Shabbos you have to go with that opinion too. That's why the rabbis say you can't daven Ma'ariv so early on Matzei Shabbos. Many people go to an early minyan Matzei Shabbos to daven Ma'ariv. So the rabbis say, wait a second, if you're going to an early minyan on Matzei Shabbos to daven Ma'ariv, then you're saying the nightfall really begins earlier. You have to start Shabbos much earlier on Friday. And you're not doing that. So how could you be so lenient and daven Ma'ariv Matzei Shabbos early? That's why a person should try to find a rabbi who he sticks to, or a custom. You could go with the people. You say, I'm living in this community, I'll go with the customs of that community. That, practically, unless you know the sources of the halachos, a person will usually end up messing up. And not only messing up halachically, but also messing up, bringing up children who are confused. You don't want your children being anomalies. You want them being part of the norm. Even when I asked Rabbi Feinstein once about waiting 3 hours, I'm a Yeki, my custom is to wait 3 hours, and I don't do mishmash. I keep the Yeki custom on anything I know the Yeki custom. I don't know everything, but what I know the Yeki custom, I try to keep it. And he told me on this point I should reconsider, even on such a small point. When I'm keeping all the other Yekish customs, he told me, look, you don't want your kid going to school and other kids looking at him and saying, oh, he's funny, he waits only 3 hours. So even on such a small point, when I'm keeping everything else about the Yekish custom, but because it's not the norm in the society we live in, he urged me to reconsider. Okay, so sometimes it's worth taking on a stringency. You could be pluralistic. The question is, will your child's classmates be as pluralistic?
It would make sense if a person is studying a religious on the show, they should
in truth, the Torah is one Torah. And if you feel like this person learned the Torah well, and you want to trust him in giving halachic ruling, so then why would a person say, he's the one that can tell me what the halach is, but when it comes to Ashkafa, I'll ask someone else. So people like to say it's two different things, halacha and Ashkafa. But in truth, they both stem from the same Torah, and if he's the halachic authority you're looking to tell you what the halacha is, so it would make sense that he should be the one you're looking for answers in Ashkafa. That's an ideal sense. The problem is that sometimes the person would say, okay, if I could, I would find a rabbi who goes with the Ashkafa that makes sense to me and ask him my halachic question. But I live out in Chile, I live out in Uzbekistan. Where I live, there's one rabbi who knows the halacha, and he's the only one I could ask my halachic questions to. And I know that there are rabbis who go with different thoughts when it comes to Zionism and questions of Ashkafa, but I can't access them to ask them my questions in halacha. So sometimes a person has no choice but to adopt a certain rabbi for his halachic question, and then he has to partition and go with a different rabbi for his Ashkafa question. But when a person is living here in Jerusalem, I don't think a person has that excuse. This partition is not the ideal situation. The ideal situation is if you hold with this person and you can ask him your questions in halacha, you should also go with him in Ashkafa.
What if it's Rav Magnus when he says he has a lot of things, really says, you can call him.
You could get close to Rav Magnus, I know. You could also ask him for invitations for Shabbat.
After maybe
you're trying to
put down a lot of questions, but then they be more responsive.
Ask him, call him on his cell phone. The Magnus is accessible. And you could ask him when he's traveling. He travels from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem twice a week back and forth. So try to catch him when he's en route. He teaches in Tel Aviv. Rav Magnus is one of the top rabbeim in America Zerab. Rav Magnus is accessible. If he's the one you want to ask,
he
speaks English, yes. If you don't have his cell phone, I have it at home. Yeah. Anything else on this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.